James, we're back and into episode 13. We've had a little bit of a break, but excited to get lucky number 13. And today we're going to talk about an essay that you actually sent me by author Jonathan Haidt. Is that how you pronounce his last name, Haidt?
I've heard it numerous ways, so yes.
Yeah. Anyway, which this essay seems to be a teaser or a prelude to obviously his new book that he's writing, titled Kids in Space, which evidently centers around this topic of this teen mental health epidemic and the rise of this since 2012. Now, by the time this is published, I'll link the essay in the show notes and encourage listeners to pause, read the essay, and then continue with the episode for better context.
Yeah,
because that'll be far more helpful. But as a bit of a background, I guess for those that don't know, Jonathan Haidt has published a number of works, but likely most popular for his book, The Coddling of the American Mind, which in summary explored the negative effects of, I guess, overprotective college campuses and the negative effect that that's having on students, particularly seen in the rise of anxiety, depression, and suicide, specifically on college campuses. I mean, James, that's what I took from that book. It's a great book.
I think the only thing that I would add to it was he created a timeline and a connection between those young people being raised on a digital platform and then what he saw occurring at the college level.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a connector of, like, if you're in your formative years when you're 13 years of age, if you're inundated with this, like, oh, this is reality, these are relationships, this is how you like things, etc., online with the like button, then what happens when you become a young adult and then you're dealt with these things like, oh, you know, are you willing to discuss the concept of racism? Immediately on your ideas, right, that you have going into that, your brain can't handle those big challenging things, so you just fall into, you know, you fall into these buckets, you know, that he has said has come from the media infiltration.
Yeah, and encourage anyone to read that book. It's phenomenal. And this essay is obviously resurfacing a lot of these ideas and thoughts. And I think there's obviously something that's happening in the younger generations that we really can no longer afford to ignore.
Yes.
There has been for too long this acceptance of this null hypothesis with Haidt talks about, which we'll go into. And then until we really recognize and accept that, we're really going to be unable to move forward in any meaningful way. So today we're going to, you know, unpack the essay a little bit to define the problem, kind of when this epidemic started, look at some of the causes to try to come up with some potential solutions. To move forwards and use the role of fitness and physical practice to link in to how that's a part of that journey and how that can be a road out of this problem. James, is there anything that you wanted to add to that as well before we get kind of stuck in?
The only thing was to name the other author with Jonathan. His name is Greg Lukianoff. And I'd only mention Greg because I'm a part of his organization, which is called FIRE. FIRE, and you could research that. Basically, this is a pro-human, pro-legal approach to the need for heterodox opinion at the university level. And this group creates a whole bunch of movement around the legal aspects inside of that whole area. So I just wanted to make mention of that as well. And that the co-author, these guys are. And the reason why I mentioned it too is they're both what I would call boots on the ground and people that are really trying to, like, dig into this. Secondly, before we get started too, that's the reason why I sent you the article. And I also posted it to my team here at OPEX because what I found kind of interesting, not only the stats, Daniel, but the fact that Jonathan is now currently getting some heat from you know, the results that he is actually factually showing, you know, it kind of worries me that if you could just imagine, you know, he's basically saying, and this is just just the terminology. Listen, there's a problem. There's a major problem, right? And here's the stats. And he just like kind of like throws it out. And then you have a particular group as of right now going, listen, the kids are all right. Things are just fine. I got a big problem with that. So that's those two things there. I would just add to your point on it. And of course I'm interested in what our project is to kind of at least come up with some ideas as to how we can look at this in a different light and how we can approach it from a health activist, a health pro health, you know, approach and see if we can, find a spot there. And it's not just going to be wearing your VR sets, pretending you're on a Peloton in the Alps for kids. It's not going to be the answer.
What do you mean? The future is now.
Well, we could find some variation of it. Like maybe you could wear VR sets and come into the quote unquote gymnasium and think that you're in a rainforest and you're being chased. And at the end of it, kids are just like gassed out and they don't hit each other. And maybe there's something in that, but anyways.
No, there's got to be a happy medium where that physical activity and tech kind of got to be a sweet spot.
Yeah,
but it does not surprise me in the slightest that he's getting heat for putting out these stats.
Right. It's like a couple of other things, you know, that you could dig into in society's views on intelligence, society's views on meritocracy, society's views on personalized and political identity. Like in my opinion, we should talk more about this, you know, and then deal with whatever we come up with, right, in the stats. But you don't repress this, or you don't say no, we're past talking about those things. That kind of gives me, it actually gives me a visceral, like really worrying response.
Yeah.
And so hence that's why I sent it to you. But you know, less on that. I don't know if you have any time for me to just reminisce over a couple of points that I had on it. Just two things. I wanna be a devil's advocate for the quote unquote steel man argument of the kids are all right. And I just wanted to point that out too, because there are some interesting things inside of that. I don't have to go too far than my home to see this too, right? Like I could see little things in there, but when it comes to the big picture, my girls and a lot of their friends are really all right, you know? So you see, that's where my starting point is that when I'm in that particular situation, recognizing my ecosystem and my bubble, I'm like, well, there's a good point for that. But remember, and this is what Bernie, one of my mentors that has passed, has always told me, especially when you want to do studies and when you want to do analysis, when you want to do, and this is something, you know, you could probably speak to, is inside of the research methods, you always have to be careful what you ask for in the studies, right? You got to be careful what you ask for. My whole point on that is that, and this is the steel man argument against like the kids are all right. You know, if you're, and I use the lens in terms of the, you know, sexual identity, which I don't want to go into the politics around that, but in 1988, you could make the argument that, oh, you know, there were all these sexual identities and gender identities, and we just didn't ask for it. That's a fair point. But in 1988, when you were to answer, like, you know, where do you sit, you know, in your gender, and you were applying for, you know, trying to, you know, download a movie, which wasn't possible, but just go with me here. You know, there was two options, and there wasn't too much heat around there only being two options. Okay. Now in 2022, for good reason, because, you know, it's this discussion. And as I said, we need to talk about this to kind of work it out. There's seven options. Okay. And so that's my point. If you're asking in a particular study, and this is going to come back to the point on suicidal ideation, self-harm, et cetera, right? If you're going to ask about that in the study, what do you expect to get as answers? So I do want to, you see what I'm saying? I do want to speak a little bit about what I know in research methods and what I wanted to have happen in the interpolated twitch technique stuff that I did on muscle fatigue. If I ask the particular questions on perception, and then the client is like, yeah, I never thought about that until you mentioned it in the questionnaire. Do you see that? So I want to give a little bit of room for, you know, the incomplete access that we have to stats, I want to give a little bit of room there for, you know, if you're asking people about suicidal ideation and self-perception and identity in the social media platforms. Do you see what I'm saying? I just wanted to see if you got any ideas or thoughts on that, or a retort back to the person who's arguing the other side.
No, I think it's good to connect the dots. And what James is referring to when he talks about kids are all right in this article is the author's talking about the acceptance of this null hypothesis, where often two, I find, valid points are made. One, obviously there are the common criticisms of the younger generations, which go back, as he said, thousands of years, where older generations have, you know, more of a cognitive bias, finding younger people inferior or declining. You know, that classic saying, you know, the kids these days. And second, it's usually, and again, it's detailed in this article, part of a societal panic that arises in response typically to a consumer product. And in this case, it being social media's rise around 2012. And again, it's just been this common theme. And I think to James's point now, if you're going to spend, or are you going to connect billions of people via the internet phones, where they have more of an autonomous means to self-report, and then you ask the questions, you're probably going to find some pretty scary statistics. And if that doesn't fit the narrative, then you obviously start to get a lot of heat and a lot of backlash. Is that kind of articulating that as well, James?
Yes. Yeah, of course. I just forgot about forgetting to use the term too. What's called digital natives. This is a point that, again, it's very tough. Like, just trying to pick up on your point of like, we went along all this time saying like, oh, kids these days, you know? And I'm always, you know, conscious of the fact that it is quite possible that there's nothing different today than there was like 100 years ago. But I always that's the strain that I have personally inside of me, right? Is like this conservative, traditional, Puritan concept of physical activity, right? But I look out there and it's like, yeah, but there's iPhones. You know what I'm saying? So my whole point on that is that I don't know if we can say kids these days anymore, Daniel. Again, as a steel man to the like through lines, right? Because people always bring up the arguments like, well, you know, we didn't have printing press, and all of a sudden there was writing, and then things changed. It's like, yeah, man, you know. So my whole point is being, if you're born 2000, and you're 2012, and then there's this iPhone, and then there's all this, you know, forms of communication, that in 150,000 years of existence, and I could go back further, but I'll just try to meet halfway for everyone. 150,000 years of Homo sapiens, we've only had it for like 6 months. So yeah. This is my whole point on that, on your point of like kids these days. I do think we need to rethink what we mean when we say that, kids these days. We can't just say, and I'll stop after this. We can't just say, well, just remove the phones till they're 18. You're crazy. I don't know what to tell you. You're crazy. You're either someone who doesn't have a parent, or you're so hard and old against your own shit of these kids these days things that you can't see past that, you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, I hope that gets us to where it's like, listen, like Kevin Kelly says, with technology, we got to learn how to mesh with it, not mess with it.
Yeah.
That's a classic. Yeah. And another way of looking at it is, I forget who the author was, but the only way out is through. The only way out is through. So take those two points along with the digital natives thing. If you're born in 2000 and 2012, we have this rise of stuff. Besides the fact of getting hooked into the rehab paradigm, oh my God, there's a problem. We need to fix this. Whoa, 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 whoa. Say, doesn't it make sense? Doesn't it make sense that this is what's happening? So I'll just raise that point. And I don't know if you've got anything to add based upon the digital native concept.
No, I think that it's important to recognize that things are in constant flux and evolution, and that we've moved on. And I think it's a real, it's a good reminder that we need to stay fluid, and we need to stay open as these changes happen, so that we don't get stuck with this, the kids are all right mentality, this rigid mentality. We're not evolving. We're not changing the way that we perceive things and how problems shift in the future. And again, interesting about how, you know, receiving heat, which is, you know, political climate is pretty normal, but he actually says that this article serves as a burden of proof. Like he himself is recognizing, the authors are recognizing that these aren't great stats. These aren't warm, fuzzy, positive stats, but someone needs to bring it to the forefront and start to talk about it so that at least we can accept it, recognize it, and start to move on. Because, you know, as they say, the kids aren't in fact all right.
Yeah. I love the wording of that, because I also see, and I just reminded us all of that, is that it's careful that we don't fall prey to the rehab paradigm, meaning that, listen, I definitely understand that let's just take the obese kids, right, thing. You know, you could say, you know, just imagine this, right? We're not talking about mental illness. All of a sudden we're talking about kid obesity, right? Imagine, you know, you and I writing a particular, you know, researched article on true stats, right? Even material item stats, right? Like 60% of all grades fives, you know, in Maryland, you know, don't have this reading ability and are this with regards to BMI, which those two points actually are true. That's besides my point. But let's just say that those are facts. And we produced it, Daniel, right? Everyone was like, oh my God, we can't let people see this information. This is what's happening to Greg's stuff, right? And so they're being like, oh, no, we got to be careful about how we approach this and where we come up with. And I like the burden of proof concept of it, because we do need to recognize this is not the similar rehab paradigm thing, which we can shove underneath the rug. This is something that we need to like front and center face and talk about. And then my point on the rehab paradigm, don't just hammer on the fact that there's a problem. So what do you and I do as an example to the rehab paradigm with kids with regards to fitness? We talk about the root cause and then we create an ideal, right? Do you see how that's the difference as opposed to just talking for months and months on the problem? Oh, kids have mental problems. Oh, kids have mental problems. Oh, look, kids have mental problems. Okay, cool. Let's just pretend that that is true and those facts are great. What are you going to do about it? Or talk more about how this came to be. And that's where I think maybe the fitness enthusiast and health activist out there could see why this particular topic is important, because we need to use the same system that we believe in for physical activity and exercise. It's the same thing. So it doesn't allow us to like be outside and just being like, oh, it's a mental thing and we don't discuss that. No, it's the exact same thing. So what do you plan on doing? Find the root cause, which is complex, but okay, at least we're going to try, and then come up with an ideal scenario. And maybe we could, you know, you and I and others can continue that project of recognizing, listen, you know, not every kid has opportunity to sport. Not every kid has an opportunity to do physical activity. Okay, great. Do we want to continue to talk about the complaints, or are we going to come up with some solutions for it? And that's where I think you and I fall in regards to what we're trying to do and hopefully create an idea out there, as opposed to just ripping the phone out of every 12-year-old's hands.
Yeah, 100%. And for context as well, we might even just, I might paint a clear picture and pull some of the stats from the article to move on to looking at some of the causes. So essentially, you know, there's a teen mental health illness epidemic, which is, as the article shows, has been on a steep rise since 2012. And looking at some stats, it's been a 145 increase in major depression in girls since 2010, and boys 161% increase in undergraduates diagnosed with a mental illness. Anxiety's increased by 134%, depression 106%, anorexia 100%, ADHD 72%. So there, in a nutshell, is identifying a problem. Secondly, there's, again, like as we just detailed, the acceptance of this null hypothesis that the kids these days and the kids are all right. And that just flows through into accountability. And until we accept it and they're accountable for it, it is just an anchor point from which we will be unable to move forward in any meaningful way. And I guess, James, even, you know, I'm not a parent, but through observation, your girls have grown or have had much of their developmental phase through this period, as you said, within your bubble and your ecosystem, they're okay. But just through observation of their peers or kids around them, would you say that's pretty accurate as well?
The percentages?
Mm.
Oh, most definitely. And that's why I said, I'm always cautious to be like, oh, you know, those percentages are definitely right. And then forget to like, look at my kids and look at my kids' friends and look around. But I attend school board meetings. You know, I get an idea by close communication with Hannah and her friends. I get close communication with Chloe and her friends. Their friends and are always over to our place. We want our home to be a place where everyone wants to come and have good fruit. And they always remark that our fruit is really good. It's got nothing to do with the fruit. It's just that we have a loving home and we want people to come over and kind of hang out. And we have, of course, trampolines and a big yard out back. And anyways, that is happening. You know, it is happening. You could see it like seeping within aspects that are outside of that little particular bubble. And you kind of softballed it for me indirectly. And I don't know if you did that on purpose, but and this is what we talked about before, right? I forget what our P's were, but the professional, the parent, and the policymakers. There we go. We still got it. We still have to discuss that, you know, that parenting and the communication, you know, between that parent and that child, we do have to consider this. And I think it's even slightly different to using my girls as an example, meaning if you were born in 2000, right? The year 2000, right? And you're a parent, right? Let's just use the classic, you know, 30 years of age in 2000. You were born in 1970. That means you were 30 years of age in 2000, okay? You're born in 1970, you're Generation X, right? So without going into the depth of that, your generation sees things differently than that new generation, right? And whatever the case may be. Okay, you're born 2000, you're 2012. In 2012, there's this advent, right, of social media. The parent is 42. The parent, right, the parent is also trying to adapt. Do you see the difference there? So now, for example, Chloe was born in 2009. And so this is why I'm showing you the difference here between 2000 and 2009. Chloe is 3 years of age in 2012, right? But when she's 13, it's 2022, right? So this is 10 years of like, quote unquote, her parents and society having room to move in this whole new digital space. So my whole point on that is two things I want to pick out. Parenting and when the parents were born and when, how old the parents are when they had these kids, that is something inside this question we can't forget, because I would argue that those kids that were born like 2008, 9, 10 onward, I think there's more exposure to this. There's more. If you're a parent of those children, I think it's probably maybe a closer communication on this thing, i.e. like you and I discussing this, right? The movie, The Social Dilemma, right? So my girls watched that, and I think they were 12 and 14 when they watched it. But think about that. None of those kids who were born in the year 2000 had the opportunity to watch that when they were 13. Does that make sense? So I think inside of that, parenting, and I'll just finish on a principle thing that people should think about. And that's what I posted inside of the OPEX HQ channel, is that we need to, and I posted this exact article when I said it, parents, or if you're quote unquote an adult and you're a role model in your community, then you're not a parent. We need to listen to young people. We need to be far more present, and we need to communicate with these individuals without text and not through digital communication. And this other world, quote unquote, all the shit that goes on in social media and all the digital, you know, lifestyles can still take place as long. And this is where I'm just pulling out my point of view. I think that my girls and maybe their group has kind of moved through this okay, i.e. the kids are all right in that low percentage, because of one of those factors, meaning the parents had an experience like I did with this social media thing prior to kids. And then when they came about and they became in their formative years as like preteens and teens, we were communicating with them, right? We're face-to-face conversation. right? Like we're watching something on the, I'm laughing because my girls giggled so hard at this. We were laughing at the Liver King thing. And I explained to them, I was like, oh, this guy, he's taking drugs, he's on. And, but you see, my girls are laughing at that. Do you see the point there? It's like, I know, but I'm just trying to say, like, if you're 10 years removed from that and this is new to you, right?
Yeah, great point.
You see
great
how
point,
it's like, actually. You know, what the hell? I think that's real. I think that's healthy. It's like, So sorry to be lengthy on that, but I just wanted to extract that as a parent, as a principal, we need to communicate face to face and we need to have conversations with these young people. And we need to be present. And I mean really present when we have those conversations.
I think that links to kind of for us to riff on some, think critically on some of the root causes of the problem. And James, I'll kind of surmise my thoughts on this and then feel free to add and then refine. And I'm happy to change wording as needed, because I think that will be very important to get right. You know, and some of these causes that I've wrote down is, I don't know if enabling is the right word, but I wrote enabling, unrestricted and unfiltered access to platforms without kids having proper education to understand, and then having the ability to navigate, let's say, even from a physiological level, don't have the faculties to navigate it emotionally, understand it, and then kind of move forward with it, where it can sit, start to, you know, be unsettling and start to bubble up. And so that was kind of my first. The second, obviously, the topic has become somewhat popularized. This may be controversial and almost normalized in society as well, which is great because it's led to far more communication and far more open dialogue about it, which has naturally led to an increase in reporting. With more sensitive testing methods. And like I said, we're all interconnected now with our phones, which where you're more able to anonymously self-report, you know, just as an interesting side thought as to why there's been a massive spike, but interesting to hear your thoughts, whether that's going to skew the data disproportionately, or we're just actually getting some real, like we're getting to the real truth. And then the last one, as you've kind of just alluded, is a lack of reference, like a lack of role models. We aren't being directed to the right role model, which in my mind should be more local versus global. I think the parents versus the LeBron Jameses of the world, where kids are shown proper routine, such as sleep habits, nutrition practices, physical activity practices, play. And therefore we're getting diminished resilience. You know, we're not building these faculties to be able to endure or navigate tough times. And like you said, it's not a mental problem. These systems are interconnected. And how do we simplify that in order to communicate some strategies and solutions so that we can move forward? So those are three kind of causes that I kind of wrote down, but love to hear your thoughts and please add wherever needed.
Yeah, yes. Well, just check off if I do hit each one of them. But I think the fact we talked about before, I'd want to mention that especially with the decrease in sport participation today, everyone knows how I feel about that. But that is something that I think is also alarming. You know, my whole point being on that as to why I think it's alarming is that sports, whether we liked it or not, was always, as I said, an opportunity for kids to move, right? It was an opportunity in multiple different ways. So that is also an alarming thing on top of this. And what I call sports, I'm kind of segueing over to what we're using the big word, small t truth, right? Meaning that physical activity and physical expression are true scenarios that allow you a reflection as to how you're doing, right? Am I good enough? Am I strong enough? How do I deal with adversity? What happens when I get tripped up? What happens when I win? What happens when I lose? All these things that we get from physical expression practice was inside of a sport participation for a number of people, right? So imagine if that participation's down now, where we have a tremendous amount of people that are more restless, right? Possibly now immune system changes over the past couple of years, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you see why it's another alarming thing inside of this that we do need to be concerned about? To answer the question on the, I just wrote it down as information, meaning the positive thing is that we have a lot more information. To your question of like, well, what happens if, do you think we'll get to a truth? if we just allow all this information to come out. Well, the problem with that, Daniel, is the other side of more information, right? The positive thing, I'll say it in different ways. The positive thing, there's lots of information, right? The negative thing is there's a plethora of more information. So I am more pessimistic for your question of like getting to a truth scenario. I am more pessimistic. That's why we're here today and talking about this, because Jonathan Haidt's writings and the heat from that is an example of this. It's more information, but because it's more information, it just gets moved through the media stream. It just gets thrown as an article, right, in New York Times. And then tomorrow there's a new article. So that's the downside of more information. And what gets happened in there, a lot of young people get missed. A lot of people that are quote unquote, you know, what I wrote down as like the injected things towards that kid. So take the lens of the child for a second and then say to yourself, you know, who else is inside of this system? If you were to use the generalized terms let's just pick on the iPhone, okay? Or just pick on the phone, you know, the thing that, you know, you capture all your communication, et cetera, back to the point on information. Big tech wants you to have a phone. The school wants you to have a phone, right? So for parents out there today, you would be like, oh yeah, they want you to have a phone because there's multiple different reasons, Daniel, outside of this, but they want you to have a phone. Otherwise they'll call it like Google Classroom, you know, search this topic. Do you see what I'm saying? But it's all through the phone, right? And they don't do anything incentives. I'm sorry to go on a tangent on this one. This is only number two, but if the school really didn't believe in kids having access, you should say no freaking watches that are like phones allowed. You know, so once you come into school, you throw them in a bucket, and your phone, throw it in a bucket. That's the only way you participate in school today. And because 99.5% of all schools will not do that, right? Because they're like, oh, Freedom Act and children. You can see that they're okay with kids being connected to the phone. Sorry to go on that tangent. That's number two. Number three, all your peers have that phone. Pause for a second on that. Are you really going to tell your kid, the phone, no big deal. Information, you know, you'll get it through a book. Yeah, good luck. And number four, the parents also are on their phone. So this kid, so I'm just bringing us back to the lens, right, of your point of information. And if on this generalized concept of these kids having, let's call it access to this information, on the point that physical activity is on a decrease, only using the sport analogy, right? So that's something that we could see true. Big tech, school, peers, and parents are all injected inside of the system, right? They're all inside of it. So how can you stick your neck out and make some recommendations, right? To your point on like, what is information? What is true? What is bad information? You know, how do we communicate with people? It's you and I even are like, we'll text back and forth, right? We're inside the system. So I'm not sure if you can extract anything from that would be helpful, but I just don't see, I see a pessimistic outlook to a couple of your questions in there, I think.
No, the question that arises for me, and I've had this discussion a fair bit, this is specifically in context with the parents, policymakers, and professionals. I think there's a lot of gray area between, and this is on authority, between the authority or responsibility, we could call it as well, of the parents and the responsibilities or authority of the school. There's a lot of gray area and overlap. I don't know. I feel like there needs to be more of a black and white line in terms of...
Well, this is what's happening right now. And so to keep going on that point, and this is not directly attributed here, but when you have that happen, Daniel, in a society in America where we need like 30 million personalized bootstrapped education for all kids, right? Who's gonna pay for that? So to your point, yeah, I agree with that notion, but this is what you're having happening in states like Arizona. You're having private entities backed deep in, you know, with deep pockets to venture capitalists. They're making their own schools. So they're creating your own schools with the idea you just had in mind. We believe this. We only want this taught to kids. we have to be very cautious of that. We have to be very cautious of that. I hope you're seeing the darker side of what I'm mentioning there. So I agree with you. There is a responsibility for parents. There is a responsibility for teachers, right? And you could just say, listen, I don't think the teachers should have anything to do with my upbringing. Okay, that's great, but that's fucking not realistic. That's not realistic also for 30 million kids. So you could take your money and buy a school and have your child, you know, quote unquote, only learn these specific things because it works for you. But what about 30 million other kids? Right? What about 30 million other kids? So do you see that's the darker side of that aspect inside of the social democratic base support of our education, right? It can't be privatized. So, and I'm not sure if that's where you were leaning when it says black and white, but that's the darker issue of getting into the black and white scenario. Because I could find a halfway zone there too. A example, in your previous neck of the woods, there was even heat for individuals that created a lower social economic class opportunity for individuals at a low cost with charter schools that got heat. Yeah. How effed up is that? Law went against it. Well, we can't have individuals going to whatever school they want. You know, what the F, you know? So that's the darker side inside of the black and white scenario of that. And I'm also pessimistic on the, well, this is where I, you know, on other podcasts, I handle these things, or what we do with OPEC CCP. I'm just agreeing with you. Yes, there's a shit ton of parents that need help themselves, right? So, you know, to your point of like, well, parents are responsible. Yeah, but they don't even know their ass from their arm. You know, I don't even, that's not even a good analogy, but you get my point is like, why do you exercise? Well, you know, just want to lose 20 pounds. And like, you know, everyone does. What the, you know, and you're a parent? Do you see my point? So a bunch of these parents, we can't assume, right? We can't assume that they're going to be like, well, I'm going to be a role model and I'm going to like have you know, only screen time on Friday afternoon and on Saturday and Sunday. Do you see, you get my thing there? Okay.
Yeah, well, it seems impossible to shield kids from platforms and social media and phones, because again, you run the risk of going too far in the opposite direction. How is that enabling? It's not realistic. You're not enabling them to deal with, it's an asset which can be, or a tool which can be used to.
Gosh, yeah. We can go on for hours and hours on the positivity of it, right? Communicating with your friends, safety. I love knowing where my girls are, right? I love that. I mean, I was thinking about my mom, you know, flipping out and going crazy because she didn't know what I was up to, right? I think that's kind of a nice thing that I know where Chloe is when she's on her bike, right? I could get that within seconds. So yeah, there's so many positives to the other side of it, but I hope I didn't inject the concept of it's all for naught with those parents. No, but maybe someone's listening in who's like, the way through to create an opportunity for that young child is basically to make the parent and possibly the teacher, but maybe the parent to go, now, what is my digital life? Like, what am I doing as a role model for this? Do I communicate with my kids, you know, through emojis, et cetera, you know? And I'm only just picking on that as a funny thing that I don't think that should be done. I think you need to like look face to face and come up with humorous things, right? No, and see that, because I see it in my girls, right? I can see when they are not connecting me eye to eye and we don't like have humorous, you know, interaction. I don't know if you know, when's the last time, Daniel, sort of put you on the spot. When's the last time you laugh so hard that your cheeks and you were just like crying laughter, right? My girls and I have that with Leanne a couple times a week, right? It was at that point. It's like, you know, but you see that I can see when my kids and her friends don't have that. You can't get that through a phone. And I'm just pulling out one area there of the presence that we need to have in that close communication. But also I'm hoping you could see that I'm more pessimistic on the concept of, you know, quote unquote, fixing parents before they can become role models for kids.
Yeah, and exactly. I think you become too quick to demonize the phone instead of teaching how it's a tool and modeling how to use it.
Yeah. Tool. Maybe the teacher can do that too.
Yeah. And a beacon of, well, and we're probably asking the wrong questions. It's not how do we stop them using these? It's like, well, actually, and tying this to a physical practice perspective, how do we make being outdoors and playing, quote unquote, more appealing than, yeah, let's say, doom scrolling?
Yeah.
That's the problem, yeah, we're trying to solve.
Well, you and I already have the answer to that. We've come up with it. It's just who wants to take it and run with it, you know, knowing full well to keep going on that point. It's not sexy. It doesn't make you money. You know, it's not going to, like, you know, prove in like 2 months to solve all over fat kids' problems. You know what I'm saying? Like, who wants to do that? You know, so this is why I also come with my pessimism on the change for the future. And also why I should be, honestly, planting my fat flag to private education and charter schools, et cetera. I should be planting my flag hard in that. But I don't want to do it because I know we're leaving 30, then 60, then 90 million young kids over the next 10, 20 years in a shitstorm, right? In a shitstorm, unless you do something beyond just, quote unquote, taking care of your own, or if you have accessibility to it, or those around you. So you and I have already come up with the answer. To keep going on that point, so people know what I believe in and what I think we believe in. I think we believe that the opportunity for physical expression every day for a kid will take care of a shit ton of issues, right? Now, I'm a little bit more loose than I used to be on, if it's a sport, well, okay, as long as you're having great communication. Okay. But if it's a let's call it the purest concept of physical expression just for the fun of it, in like the quote unquote park idea, you know, what do we call it? The playground kind of concept, 90 minutes a day, quote unquote, you know, I'm telling you, that is the answer. And I think that's what we believe in, where you'll get to, you know what I'm saying? Like, they could still have 60 minutes screen time in the afternoon. Why? Because they did the 90 minutes in the morning. They did the 90 minutes of physical expression, right? And then you could see all the things connected to that. Do you think their central nervous system is a little less jazzed up when they get to the 60 minutes of screen time? You bet your ass it is, right? Do you think that they have more mental acuity relative to the choices that they make on social media after that 90 minutes? You bet your ass they do. Do you think that they're going to be having more mental acuity for all the other topics they're learning in school because of that? You see my point? I could go on and on, right? I could go on and on. That is the answer. You show me a program that's going to involve a 90-minute fun-oriented movement program for 12 years in a school, and I'll show you geniuses. I'll show you 95% retention rate. I'll show you a graduation rate that's superior. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's got nothing to do with color of skin, religious belief, personal identity. It's got nothing to do with that at the end, right? You're just going to get a whole bunch of people who are just moving in this direction because they have that base support of physical activity every day. Now, I'm off my high horse now, but I think that's what we believe in, and that could be an answer.
No, I agree. You're leading us into, again, riffing on some possible solutions, and that's a great one. I mean, something that I always come back to, and what I would love to do, is kind of distill it back to those first principles and simplify. And I totally agree. I think that if we often, you know, I often think, if you address the, you know, like, even talking specifically to, you know, people suffering from anxiety, depression, a lot of these mental illnesses, and not treating it, like treating the physical symptoms as well. You know, it's like, have you slept? Have you eaten a nutritious meal? Have you done some sort of a physical practice or exercise? And I often wonder if you address, you know, even just those three pieces of low hanging fruit, it would arguably eliminate 85% plus more of the problem. And if that's modeled and then practiced consistently, how much of a drop, yeah, we might see as a result.
Yeah, I think the ball turns, to go back on your question there, I think the ball turns, as an answer to your question, with physical activity. I philosophically have approached this from multiple different angles, right? I think that just approaching it from a cognitive angle is not enough. I think approaching it from a nutrition angle is not enough. I think approaching it from either of those actually makes people more neurotic. And I have lots of experience and proof to show that's the case, right? But my whole point that I make on the physical activity thing in connection to that, and the braiding that I do on like mental acuity, et cetera, you'll never find a kid. You'll never find a kid who's staying up late, who has physically exhausted themselves every day for 90 minutes. You'll never find it. This is the whole point. So if a kid has the opportunity to stay up, right? If they have an opportunity to stay up, then will they stay up? Of course they will, right? But where do you find the kid that's like falling asleep on their phone? That's the kid that expressed themselves for 90 minutes every day. So see my point, the physical activity thing, I think turns everything over. Because, and if you're not connecting the nutrition thing there, this takes a little longer, but if it goes through the case over and over, you'll get to see it. And I can prove that for myself and my girls going through this. If you just hammer on the point, listen, don't eat that shit food, and they're still physically expressing, over time, these young people will go, you know what? I can't physically express the way I want to because I'm eating shitty food. They discover this themselves. So you see my point. If you only like go after the nutrition angle without including the physical expression aspect itself, you're lost. Again, you'll create neuroticism, eating disorders, mental struggles around perception, all that shit, right? Instead, say something like this. Oh, dad, what should I eat? Whatever is going to allow you to physically express the best you can. That's the answer. And then they go, oh, interesting. I didn't know that I felt like shit after I had that food. Well, good learning. What are you going to do about it next time? Oh, I just, for Hannah, for example, yesterday we had a homemade burrito, et cetera. Why'd she make that choice? Because she knew she had tennis at 4. And when she came home at 2:45, she's like, I just know I feel good after I have that. Do you see the connection? That wasn't me. So to answer your question, I really do think we start the ball turning with a focus on physical expression opportunity for everyone. And then, yes, in layman's terms, work those little people, you know, work them hard for 90 minutes. And I think then you'll get all this mental acuity and all the positive around, you know, the cognitive ability, the balance between digital natives and, you know, analog natives, right? Like the physical universe and in the digital universe. I think we'll have a nice balance there.
Yeah, the ripple effect of that is just net positive. And
yeah, and we've seen that, Daniel, like you have, you know, you could speak to it of especially because you mentioned that young person you were working with when you were in New York, right? That they find a nice balance when the physical activity is present. But when it's not present, like through injury or overuse or something like that, it's like everything goes awry. Oh, all of a sudden I'm having these feelings of depression. What is depression? Oh, I don't really know, but people are talking about it. So I think I'm having depression. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Just a sec. You see the whole darkness then inside that. It's like, dude, you just overtrained. That's why you feel like that, right? So how about we get healed, right? You read a couple more books than you ever would, your time off for 2 weeks, and then you come back and start training and you're better. Like, oh my gosh, you know, I feel so good. Exactly. We all have these episodes. You know, so my whole point, not to negate the fact that it's probably depression to a point that could be harmful to some people, but let's just really think about in your answers to that, you should always indirectly in your pocket, as the health activists say, how much physical activity is this person doing? And if it comes with a zero, please don't look beyond that as a possible solution. Please don't look beyond that as a solution. Or and that's something that you and I believe in, and maybe someone could improve from it.
Yeah. And then, like I said, that role model point is so important. And we've got a number of podcasts that kind of go into detail about that, but definitely think global, but act local. You know, don't set the standards you yourself aren't prepared to meet, whether it comes to, you know, how you engage with media and the phone, to your own physical practice or your own nutrition practice. You know, if you're setting standards for your kids that you yourself aren't living or practicing, then don't expect to see any sort of adoption or those to just rub off somehow magically on the kids or the people that you're working with, because it just won't happen.
I like that. I like what you did there for the concept of, because local and global can mean multiple things, right? And I thought what you were saying and the way I took it, maybe people can see the local global concept of that as local, meaning being present, like what's around you, what is real and what is true, and global, meaning Kim Kardashian on a beach somewhere saying, oh, this is the glute exercise you should do. Right. So that's what I took from it. It's like focus more on local. Right. And of course, I kind of inject stuff inside of there with regards to eating local, training local, support your local gym, support your local fitness coach. Right. You know, and the reason why I like that, because of your concept, what I tied in there being local, these are people you're going to touch and like shake hands and hug and high five. Right. And get pats on the back. Those are real relationships that, quote unquote, global online, you know, just seeing LeBron James doing something on Tonal or Mirror, that's global. That's not reality. Right. And so that's what I pulled from it. But I appreciate that people could use that as a template understanding for something to think about.
Yeah. And I think about it as more compound interest as where the real impact's made. And I think, James, you've mentioned that a lot of times, you know, you could coach or work with hundreds of people, but if you make a meaningful difference in 3 to 5, you can pat yourself on the back and you can hang your hat and feel good at the end of the day, because those 3 to 5 people may go on to also impact 3 to 5 people. And those,
yes,
you know, you can see how it compounds out. So that's how I like to think. You know, you still have, you think globally in the intention and the impact that you would like to have, but then practice it at a local level. And it takes time, but if the power of compounding takes effect, then you'll have far greater an impact than you realize.
Yeah, well, I was just also thinking that you're also bringing up one of the paradoxes in the movement forward here is that the world in economy and communication is largely global. You know, so that's the tension there, right? So for us to say, well, you know, you need to be more local, well, that's also not realistic. So I just want to be a devil's advocate for the other option and the reality that's out there is that, you know, our lives are global, right? And we're told that all the time now, right? Migration of individuals in different states and working in Pennsylvania, but living in California, you know, like it's just well accepted, right? And we believe those are relationships. We believe that is work, right? So I just wanted to add, you know, a little bit of a challenging paradox in someone's brain to what we mean by that when we say local. But still, I want to finish with the point that I totally agree with you. If we were to focus on that and look around and what's in our vicinity and, like, you know, take care of that first and try to honor it, then yes, the 3 out of 100, to your point, can grow into those 3 people in 20 years, making a significant impact on a whole generation of those same 97 you didn't touch. That's what I was hoping, you know, people got from your point, is that be local, focus on what's around you, try to do your best based upon that, and keep erring towards, you know, trying to, as I would say, and to finish on, use Jonathan's ethos, which is heterodox opinion, keep conversation going, but remember facts first over values. Focus on the facts first, right? Just to pick one part of the facts, like self-harm up by hundreds of percentage points. That's a fact. That's not an opinion, right? As a value, that's a fact. So focus on those first, and then let's deal with it. Let's have more conversation on it. Knowing full well, you know, that there's going to be more information and more mis and disinformation. Okay. But what are you going to do? Right. What are you going to do? So I think within there is my personal answer. I don't think you're going to go black and white, because that will, in my opinion, depending upon the context, result in more silos for individuals, and you're not going to help the whole. So I know that may sound like I'm talking around and against some of my points, but that's just the way I feel.
No, I think that's really good. And kind of closing remarks for me is that acceptance point. I think we need to stop looking behind us and into the past as the reference point. And to your point, James, let's be present. Let's use today as the reference point. Let's accept where we are now. Let's establish an aim of where we'd like to go so that we can actually, you know, release that anchor and start to move towards it. I love that simplification of using physical activity or expression or a practice is kind of step one as a reference point as well. You know, these are the issues that we're experiencing. Let's look into physical activity levels, especially in younger generations and youth, because the ripple, the net ripple effect is ultimately likely going to be positive. And then thirdly, around those pieces, you know, parents, policymakers, and professionals, if there are gaps in your knowledge, then we've spoken about this at length, is seek out that education, you know, fill those gaps, read books, have conversations with people, and then act. You know, I think start perfect is the enemy of good, and you will learn more through doing. So start, act, practice it, be that role model, strive towards that beacon that you've kind of set for yourself, and you'll ultimately start to make good progressions.
Yeah, it makes me think about a future episode that we need to have probably as a part two, I think, on what parents can do as a first starting point, like to give them answers. Besides the fact that we believe the physical activity will be the thing that turns things over, you know, we need to actually have an episode on, you know, okay, I'm a parent and I'm listening in, right? Or I want to be a parent and I'm listening in. What do I do? Well, we'll give you the answers. So you and I will pull in our expertise based upon helping adults overcome all these things and line up attentions, right? And then you can kind of be a role model for your kid, because that will be the answer that's quick for that one. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Bookmarked for a future episode. But super. James, awesome to come to chat. Again, I would encourage anyone to read the article just to get down with the facts. And let's marinate in it for a little bit, and at least we can facilitate more discussions moving forward.
Yep. Thanks, Daniel.
Awesome. Thanks, James.